from Sandringham to South Yarra. You're listening to Southern FM.
And this is the Space Show. For the last several weeks, we have been looking at some of the satellites that observe the Earth. And with this morning's news that a large number of scientists want to declare a climate emergency, something I think they should have done in the 1990s, but Johnny Howard wouldn't listen, we are looking, that, you know, this is rather topical. Now, the Tropical Rainfall Measuring Mission was launched in 1997, 22 years ago. It had a planned three-year life, but guess what? Didn't make the news, but its actual life was 17 years and 4 months. So it was deactivated in 2015. And it's still in orbit, by the way, at 175 kilometres up. And so this farewell to the Tropical Rainfall Measuring Mission was prepared by the good folks at the Goddard Space Flight Centre.
The Tropical Rainfall Measuring Mission, or TRIM, was launched in November of 1997 to precisely measure falling rain throughout the tropics. 18 years and thousands of storms later, TRIM has contributed to the advancement of scientific milestones. TRIM has advanced research in the areas of agriculture, disease tracking, precipitation physics, and natural hazards.
We get roughly 3 hourly rainfall estimates across much of the globe at fairly high resolution. And these rainfall estimates are used to monitor major rainfall events and to look for events that might lead to significant flooding, even landslides. And there are a number of groups that have been using it as sort of an early warning system.
TRIM's unforeseen longevity has provided more robust information on weather and climate patterns that can only be seen after years of observations. This nearly two decades of data lets scientists see variations in rainfall from year to year, how El Niño affects rain patterns worldwide, and the anatomy and life cycle of major storms like hurricanes.
It's also proven to be an extremely useful satellite for understanding hurricanes, part because its orbit stays within the tropics, so you get much more frequent observations. And it's just provided a wealth of rainfall information over its relatively short time period that in many ways surpasses all of the information we had prior to that.
From giant storms to individual droplets, TRIM also provides scientists with data on the precise physics of falling raindrops.
TRIM has a unique set of instruments, including the first and only precipitation radar in space. It also has a microwave imager, which is an instrument that can give you the equivalent of like an X-ray of a storm, whereas the radar is giving you more of a CAT scan of the storm. It provides extremely valuable information on the structure, rainfall structure of storms, which tells us something about how the storm is responding to its environment, whether or not it might intensify or weaken in the upcoming hours.
As TRIM's mission ends, the Global Precipitation Measurement Mission builds on TRIM's objectives. Launched in early 2014, GPM's two instruments are more advanced and more sensitive versions of TRIM's microwave imager and precipitation radar. GPM's orbit extends coverage beyond the tropics and provides measurements of light to heavy rain and snow, expanding TRIM's legacy into the future.
Well, that satellite, the GPM, has now been put into orbit and is returning some amazing data. Now, in this feature, we are going to hear from Gail Skofronik Jackson, who's the Deputy Project Manager of GPM, Dahlia Kirschbaum, the Applications Scientist, and Arthur Hu, who is a Project Scientist, and we are going to have Candice Carlisle, the Deputy Project Manager, and squeezing into the studio also, Art Azarbarzin, the project manager. Now, the studio I speak of course, is not here at Southern FM, but is at the Goddard Space Flight Center. So here we go.
¶¶ Fresh water is extremely important on Earth. Only 3% of our water is actually in the form of fresh water. And only a fraction of that is actually usable fresh water on the surface.
If we don't know what kind of fresh water availability we have, then we may have issues in terms of droughts. We might have landslides, floods, and things like that. And we need to be able to track this long term.
So understanding how fresh water moves through the system is extremely important, both at the local scale, looking at how much water we have in our reservoir, to the larger scale, looking at how precipitation moves from ice pack to the ocean and then is evaporated from there. Sensors on the ground can look at a point source, so we understand how much rain is falling at a specific location. But there aren't very many gauges around the world that can provide that information for us.
If we were to take all the existing rain gauges in the world, they would fit into an area of about the size of two basketball courts.
So what satellites enable us to do is provide a much more global picture of the rain that we observe.
GPM is an international satellite mission that will set a new standard for precipitation measurement from space, providing a new generation of observations of rain and snow in all parts of the world every 3 hours. The GPM mission consists of a constellation of nine satellites provided by a consortium of partners in the United States, Japan, France, India, and Europe. The GPM constellation is united by a common reference satellite known as the GPM Core Observatory, provided by NASA and JAXA.
GPM is one of the largest spacecraft we've ever built here at Goddard. It's about 13 meters by 6.5 meters by 5 meters. That's about the wingspan tip to tip of a small corporate jet and about the same weight, but only one-third as long. In the particular case of GPM, we are a follow-on mission to the Tropical Rainfall Measuring Mission, which was launched in 1997. So part of what GPM is supposed to do was just continue those measurements. But also GPM is to improve those measurements by being able to, for example, measure finer precipitation.
The more channels you have within one instrument, then you can cover a wide spectrum of a precipitation products, all the way from rain to ice.
The GPM core has an active radar and a passive radiometer, and these two instruments are just like what a doctor might use in terms of an X-ray for the radiometer and a CAT scan for the radar to diagnose what's happening in clouds and to understand what's happening with the precipitation.
The data collected by the GPM Core Observatory will provide a unique data set that will allow us to translate satellite measurements into the rain or snow that hits the ground anywhere on the globe.
NASA is funding the development of a satellite called MAIA, M-A-I-A. MAIA is how I should pronounce it, I suppose. Now, this is an acronym for Multi-Angle Imager for Aerosols. It will make multi-angle radiometric and polarimetric measurements using two cameras. Both are needed to characterize the sizes, compositions, and properties of particulate matter in air pollution. As part of the investigation, researchers will combine satellite measurements with population health records. This will help to better understand the connections between aerosol pollutants and health effects. The people in Delhi at the moment will be very interested in this. These effects include adverse birth outcomes, cardiovascular and respiratory diseases, and premature deaths. The project is being led by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory with many other NASA, university, and international partners. Maia will be hosted on a commercial satellite in low Earth orbit, and it will be launched in 2022. Well, now to the ozone layer and refrigerants and their effect on it. So let's take this from the Goddard Space Flight Center.
A new NASA study takes a closer look at a group of chemicals once thought to be harmless to Earth's ozone layer. Hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, are synthetic chemicals found in common household items like refrigerators and air conditioners. They were created to replace chlorofluorocarbons, a group of ozone-depleting chemicals found to cause the ozone hole over Antarctica. But NASA scientists now reveal that HFCs also contribute to ozone depletion.
HFCs were thought to be ozone-friendly because they don't contain chlorine atoms, which destroy ozone molecules. Our study is the first to show that as HFC levels increase, they will have a weak but measurable impact on the ozone layer.
HFCs trap heat in the atmosphere, raising temperatures. In the stratosphere, which contains the protective ozone layer, this warming speeds up chemical reactions that deplete ozone. Atmospheric concentrations of these chemicals are currently growing at around 7% a year and are projected to be over 17 times higher by 2050. Using a NASA computer model, the scientists simulated the impacts of HFCs on the ozone layer. They found that HFCs will reduce global ozone levels by 0.035% by the year 2050.
The ozone depletion we calculated was small, but about 100 times larger than a previous estimate.
Studies show an increase in HFC levels will affect more than the ozone layer. HFCs are strong greenhouse gases that contribute to the warming of the planet. By the year 2050, their contribution to global warming could be as large as 20% that of carbon dioxide.
Now that we better understand the impacts of these particular greenhouse gases on the ozone layer, our next step is to study how these chemicals contribute to other changes in Earth's climate and the environment.
NASA plans to fly a pair of small satellites to probe a little-studied portion of radiant energy emitted by the Earth. In a project called Polar Radiant Energy in the Far Infrared Experiment, the satellites will look for clues about Arctic warming, sea ice loss, and ice sheet melting. The principal investigator is Tristan Lacuya from the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He considers there is an urgent need for his satellites because the Arctic is one of the most rapidly changing areas of the planet. The instrument is known by the acronym PREFIRE, P-R-E-F-I-R-E, and it's based on technology previously flown to Mars as the Mars Climate Sounder. So there we have it. Applications of space technology to our urgently needed understanding of the Earth's climate. Well, this has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie. It's The Space Show. We'll be back next Wednesday.